Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm Tommy Vitor.
Lovett is, of course, a devout Christian, so he's taken one more day to fully celebrate Easter.
And then he will have risen. Maybe that worked.
Yeah, I think it worked. All right, so on today's show, Trump's apprentice-style Veep stakes has begun. Wall Street billionaires are coming to his rescue. His Truth Social stock is tanking. Lost $1 billion today. And he continues to attack and threaten his political opponents and their families. Meanwhile, Joe Biden reaches out to Nikki Haley voters and move over Beyonce because RNC chair Lara Trump has dropped a banger.
Oof.
Yeah.
She is.
But first, I hope all who celebrate had a happy Easter because the most online partisan Republicans certainly did not. Everyone from Trump and Mike Johnson on down was outraged that Joe Biden issued a proclamation on Transgender Day of Visibility, as he has for the last 4 years without controversy. But the reason Republicans had a fit this year is because Transgender Day of Visibility, which has been March 31st for the last 15 years, happened to fall on Easter Sunday. And the idea that a devout Catholic like Biden would dare to tell a group of Americans who've been targeted by hate and discrimination that they're loved and included on Easter, of all days, was too much for the anti-trans community.
To celebrate the day of trans visibility in and of itself is an affront to Christianity, but it's also a random day created by a random person out of Michigan in the same way that I could declare March 30th is the day of Lisa.
Well, recognize it another day, not on Easter Sunday. It's an affront to the Bible.
Well, this is a clear effort and a coordinated effort to remove God from our society and to replace God with false gods. And in this instance, it's the trans community.
Why did we replace God with a trans god?
I didn't know we did that.
Yeah. So I wasn't too surprised that this became a thing on the right.
No.
I didn't expect the magnitude of the freakout. What did you make of the war on Easter?
It's so manufactured. And we're so used to this manufactured outrage, we're probably kind of numb to it, but it is exhausting and relentless. And it's just, Republicans are able to do this in part because they have the media infrastructure to amplify it. And they kick it up. And then, because Fox covers it, you get a bunch more Republicans who put out statements, and then it becomes a bigger thing. And the utterly phony nature of this faux outrage was best embodied by Caitlyn Jenner, who on March 31st, 2017, tweeted, hashtag trans day of visibility. There's no better visibility than with sisters by my side, as a photo of Caitlyn with some of her friends. And then this weekend tweeted, I am absolutely disgusted that Joe Biden has declared the most holy of holy days, a self-proclaimed devout Catholic, as Transgender Day of Visibility. The only thing you should be declaring on this day is he, all caps, is risen. So I don't know. I guess Caitlyn Jenner is fine with people saying she doesn't deserve to exist on certain days. But, we've seen this a million times in the Obama years. The Main Street media then covers the controversy that's get kicked up by Fox News. And here we are.
It broke through in such a way and so quickly that it like got to all the normies in my life.
Me too.
That's why I was like, okay, I get this. Like in 2015, 16, 2012, it could be like a couple segments on a Fox show, a couple Fox hosts, a right-wing radio. The fact that we had the fucking Speaker of the House, Donald Trump, you're not really surprised there, no. And like Republican governors, Republican congressmen, like it was everywhere. And it's so fucking phony. And you know it's phony because now that they've all been corrected, because they were all wrong, because Joe Biden didn't pick the day, and the day just happened to fall on Easter, because these people don't know how fucking calendar works, or they're all supposed to be devout Christians, but they don't get that Easter Sunday means that it's a different date every year, that it's been around for 15 years, that Biden has, proclaimed it, has issued a proclamation for the last 4 years. They're still doing it. They were still doing it today. They're just like they didn't back down even a hint because it's just phony.
No one's mad at Christ for resurrecting on Trans Visibility Day. You know what I mean? Why don't you ever hear that? What did you make of the fact that the Trump statement drew a distinction between Catholics and Christians? I'm no Huguenot, but that had my spidey senses.
I know. I heard people saying that it is a historic sort of slight from Protestants to Catholics. I think they did it because Trump was very annoyed after the last election that he didn't get more of the Catholic vote, partly, and I think that's partly because Biden won back some white working class voters and Biden's Catholic, right? And so I think that they are targeting. They really want the Catholic vote, and so they thought they would go after Catholics, but specifically, but, even though it doesn't make any sense,
because
Catholics
seen as
are Christians.
But it's a slight on Catholics. It's a suggestion that you're not really a Christian. You're a Catholic. You're an other thing, right?
Well, it says Christians and Catholics
to the millions of Catholics and Christians. But I mean,
right.
Christians should encompass
slight,
Catholics.
It of course does.
One would think.
It of course does. But what really annoys me about this too, like, this isn't some policy debate about, you know, gender affirming care or high school sports. It is simply just recognizing trans people, a nice message of love and inclusion. And it's like, how does that hurt you, right? Like, even if you think being trans isn't compatible with Christianity, which I would say is bullshit, like, how does it affect you to have this fucking statement out?
It's just childish. I mean, I think that it got to the normies in people's lives, I think, because there was the first sort of round of stories on the made-up controversy suggested that Joe Biden chose this day. He chose Easter Sunday, and they didn't have the context that this, it's always been the 31st, and that's been the case for 15 years. And with all lies, like, that took a lot of time to catch up to people who are reading about the story or maybe never will.
Yeah, that's right. Were you also enraged that the White House Easter egg contest doesn't allow for submissions that include religious symbols, which has apparently been the case for the last 45 years?
I had to read about this one 5 times to try to get it, and I still don't think I do. So the White House works with the American Egg Board to put on the Easter Egg Roll, which is an event on the South Lawn on Easter Sunday. My only experience of the Easter Egg Roll was 1 year I got my cousin Jeremy tickets, and he went with his daughters. And then I asked if he wanted to go again next year, and he was like, nah, we're good.
It is very crowded.
I think it was very crowded, a lot of screaming kids sweating on a lawn, so whatever. But I guess, yeah, they don't allow religious egg designs. They haven't since 1976. What's Gerald Ford doing, I guess? But I guess my reaction was, who cares? But also, why not? If some little goober wants to make an egg with a crucifixion on it, like, have at it.
I don't get it either, because there was it's the same language they've used for 45 years. Yeah. And it's like, no offensive symbols, no partisan symbols, and also no overtly religious symbols. I imagine it's some kind of, like, you know, civil rights, liberties language where separation, church and state, and all that kind of stuff. Like, but, you know, like if you want to come to the Easter egg roll with a big picture of Jesus on your shirt, great. Just don't put it on the fucking egg. So anyway, that's what's going on with Joe Biden on Easter. Here's a fun CNN chyron that was blaring across the television screen yesterday. Trump spends Easter Sunday posting on social media about, quote, people that I completely and totally despise. He went on a real tirade on his fake Twitter. He also posted about, quote, the crucifixion of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's, of course, appropriate. That's appropriate for Easter.
As we speak.
And he posted 2 pieces that call Trump, quote, a miracle sent and chosen by God himself.
Sure.
So my opinion is that those Easter messages would weird out more normie voters than the current president saying nice things to trans people. But what do you think?
I feel like stories like this are when I feel the most like I'm either in a time machine or stuck in a sort of broken, endless loop of Trump. Because this happens all the time. We get outraged. I think his followers kind of find it ironic and funny, I guess. Some of the white Christian evangelicals probably believe more than we'd like to admit that he is some flawed vehicle from Christ.
They do.
to do his bidding. Now, obviously, Trump likes this response because this is essentially a format he uses. I Googled a random holiday just to see if there was a good example, John. I Googled Trump Veterans Day comments. This is from Veterans Day speech last year. We pledge to you that we will root out the communist, Marxist, fascist, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, that lie and steal and cheat on elections. So I think we actually covered that.
Was that Christmas?
No, that was Veterans Day.
Oh, Veterans Day. Sorry.
So I don't know. There are probably a lot of voters. We know from polling. There are voters who hate this side of him. They hate the tweets and the cruelty. But I don't know.
I think the normies don't like this.
Normies don't like it. They'll probably
I don't think
never
they'll
hear
about it.
Exactly.
That's the thing, is I think we need to like, I mean, it. Just the idea, or and by the way, there's a lot of normie voters who are religious, who are Christians or Catholic or whatever, and they don't think that they're not Trump supporters. They don't think that he is some god. They don't think he is like Jesus.
No, probably not.
And when he compares himself to Jesus and then spends Easter just attacking random people and never mentions Jesus, they probably think that's weird. They probably think that's fucking, if they heard about it, they would think that's fucking weird.
Yeah, it is weird. I think, though, the religious in our, the evangelical Christians have been all in on Trump, and the kind of normie voter religious folks, I don't know, they don't talk about it too much. So yeah. It hasn't got a lot of blowback. The thing I do wonder about is we used to talk about how people wanted politics to be boring again and that Joe Biden was kind of the answer there. I wonder if that was a lie. I wonder if we all got hooked on the like weird Trump fentanyl of the vicious shit talking, you know, it's just so like jarringly different than what we're used to, that people kind of miss this stuff. That's my fear.
Yeah. I think we like it, meaning we, the highly politically engaged people who like follow this stuff all the time. And I mean, we obviously hate Trump and are doing everything we can to avoid him being elected. But I do think there is a very online or very like attentive to politics type of person who sees all this and is just like, you know, this is like every day and we're all caught up in it. I think that most people, first of all, like you said, I think it's what you said, they're not paying attention to this.
Most will never see
this. Most people will never hear about this controversy. Though, if I was the Biden people, I don't know. I'd do some targeted advertising about Trump, the fake religious asshole who's always talking about how he's persecuted, because it does fit back into the overall message about him that he only fucking cares about himself. One of the posts said that Trump posted this from a supporter, said, "It's ironic that Christ walked through his greatest persecution the very week they are trying to steal your property from you." Yeah, Jesus Christ dying for mankind's sins is much like Trump's inability to post $500 million bond because he committed business fraud and was held liable for it.
Do you remember when Trump was asked by a reporter who shall not be named what his favorite Bible passage was?
Oh,
and he was like,
I forgot about
Corinthians
this.
2 or something. He just got it completely wrong. It was clear he'd never read a single Bible passage.
I saw this. Remember that McKay Coppins Atlantic piece in 2016? Yes. And the headline is Trump secretly mocks his Christian supporters.
Yes.
It's all he knows.
It's all out there and they never care.
Yep. They never care.
He does their bidding on abortion.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's message on Easter. Easter reminds us of the power of hope and the promise of Christ's resurrection. As we gather with loved ones, we remember Jesus' sacrifice. There's Joe Biden.
There you go.
In other Trump news, his search for a running mate to replace the guy his mob almost hung is reportedly getting serious. Lots of interest in this job. Don't know why. Politico says the campaign is currently busy vetting a list that includes the following candidates: Tim Scott, J.D. Vance, Katie Britt, Marco Rubio, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, all the Dakotas, Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Florida Representative Byron Donalds, and Tulsi Gabbard, former representative from Hawaii, former Democrat turned crazy person. And here's a dark horse from convicted felon Roger Stone.
Got a name?
You know who I'd like? I just thought of this last night. Devin Nunes, 20-year member of Congress, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, someone Donald Trump is very close to and trusts entirely, Hispanic, a former farmer before he went to Congress. I think he'd be an excellent choice.
Not Hispanic.
I think he's Portuguese.
He's not. Yeah, he is. Yeah. Portuguese, not Hispanic.
Very different.
Currently running Truth Social, yeah. A big, huge scam. Seems so that's a great choice.
Funny.
All right, so we have been waiting patiently and responsibly for the Republican primary to end before engaging in silly and ultimately pointless VP speculation. Now we get to let it rip.
Let's go.
All right, here's a few questions. Who on that list do you think gives Trump the biggest political benefit?
Okay. We'll see what you think about this one. And by the way, the quote was, "The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics."
Honestly, great answer if you don't know.
That was the funniest thing.
It's a great
What's
answer.
A Bible passage that means a lot to you? I don't want to get into specifics.
I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil it. Read. What are the people who haven't read it? You got to read it yourself.
It's truly the funniest thing ever.
Amazing.
Okay. What do you think about this? On paper,
mm-hmm.
I kind of think the most valuable pick could be Tulsi Gabbard.
What?
Yeah.
No
Wait
way.
For it. Stick
okay.
with me. Stick
give
with
it
me. Stick
give
with
it
me.
To me. Give it to
okay.
me.
Okay. Because if you pick a Democrat, that is the most surprising thing he could do. It is the biggest tent argument, right?
It's like, is she still a Democrat?
No, but she was one.
Okay,
and they would
you
just
can
talk
say former.
She's elected Democrat.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so you could make that argument that, like, you can't call me too partisan. He picked a Democrat for his VP, right? So it's a big tent thing. And then also, Trump knows that Republicans are struggling with women, especially after the Dobbs decision. And you could see Tulsi as an asset there. Now, that's on paper. In practice, she's really weird. So there's
that. And she's really weird and just gotten weirder, steadily weirder over time.
Remember the messages to Putin, like to camera?
Yeah, she's got a little, she's a little too Putin friendly. Just very weird. She would do the very, like the RFK Jr. type, like, I'm anti-war, anti-establishment, anti, yes. like, populist, yes. right? Like, she would go
She's
there.
She's in the military.
So I could, yeah. It's You know what? You sort of...
I know.
You make a good case.
Call me Roger Stone.
You make a better case than I expected for Tulsi Gabbard.
Who's your number one?
Tim Scott.
Okay.
I think for political benefit, I he's the one I worry about because mm-hmm. I think he could create a permission structure for disengaged black voters, especially black men, young black men, who don't like either candidate.
Yep.
And the permission structure will allow them to back Trump. Because and these are, by the way, these would be voters who do not pay close attention to politics, are not partisan Democrats, consider themselves moderate, who, by the way, are the, if we're, to the extent that Democrats have an issue with black voters, it is those black voters that the party's worried about that mm-hmm. have been drifting away from the party. And I think Tim Scott, again, if you haven't paid attention to the primary, he's young. He's seemingly genial. Like, and I think that Trump, I could see the campaign yeah, wanting that. And I could also, Kellyanne Conway made a pitch for him in a New York Times op-ed. So that's the one that I kind of worry about.
Counterpoint, too weird.
That's why I think that Trump might not want him.
Yeah, there are some vibes there. I mean, I think Byron Donalds is similar. You can imagine the campaign wanting an African-American VP to help reach out to black voters. He does create that similar permission structure. But also, CNN had a recent report about how much Byron Donalds used to shit on Trump on Facebook, including comparing the birther attacks to being a 9/11 truther. So you do think that one might sting a bit.
And also, how many people are they going to have move out of Florida for Donald Trump? Because he's also from Florida, like just like Rubio.
This gets you to my favorite option, which is you get Rubio to move out of Florida and then you don't pick him.
Oh my God, I didn't think about that. That's so funny.
Because under the Constitution, you can't both be from the same state.
You get him to move. Where can we have him
Jersey.
Move? Jersey. We get him to move to Jersey, and then you just don't pick him.
Just kidding, Jersey.
That's such
probably
a great
pick
idea.
Wednesday. Georgia.
Right.
Any others? Any other favorites you like?
As terms of like helping him politically, I honestly don't think. I mean, there is the like he picks a woman, so that helps him politically. I don't know. I think it very much depends on who he picks. Like, I don't know how well Kristi Noem wears after a while. She's like selling veneers, you know. That's
why
weird.
Is she doing teeth ads?
I don't
for
know.
Out of state dentist.
I don't think Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets you much.
No,
right?
What if Doug Burgum writes a big check?
That's. I guess that would help him politically. A big check.
Yeah,
that's a possibility. Katie Britt. I wonder. Like right now, she's super mockable because of the State of the Union response. People who know her were sort of surprised how bad she was. So I wonder if she could possibly fix that over time.
Yeah.
And now her expectations are low. But I think, honestly, I think most of these people are like just a net neutral. Like, right. I don't think they help or hurt politically. Though I do, like I said, I do worry about Tim Scott a little
bit. Well, with Katie Britt, there's a non-zero chance that she crawls through your TV and kills you like the girl in The Ring.
I know. It's like, can she shake that? Can she shake that weird?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But in terms of the negatives generally, I mean, I do think the downside to Britt, Kristi Noem, Byron Donalds, Tulsi, and to probably a lesser extent, J.D. Vance, is that they are just less well-known, and so you have more of an opportunity to define them. You probably remember this. Actually, you guys might have all been at the convention. When McCain picked Palin, we were sitting around at Obama HQ, like literally Googling her name and learning about her for the first time, and also finding brutal opposition research hits on her in real time. And she's obviously like a singularly terrible pick. But there was a bit of this with Pence too, because people didn't really know him that well outside of DC. And they were digging up his old columns, like attacking Mulan or whatever. And, you know, there was a lot of space there to define them nationally.
Well, and Pence turned out to be just a nothing burger.
Yeah.
Right? Like, didn't help him, didn't hurt him, was just there.
Just around.
Which is, until he almost wasn't. Which is exactly what Donald Trump wants, right? Like, he doesn't want anyone to outshine him. Mm-hmm. He just wants someone to be loyal, sit next to him, and then overturn the election if he needs them to do that.
Exactly.
That's all he wants.
Exactly.
So do you think there's anyone who would be a political net negative like a Sarah Palin? Like, I don't know if there's anyone in this crowd. Like, maybe Gabbard, if she goes sideways.
She's got the sideways potential. Not an obvious one, but I do think the lesser known ones create the most risk for you.
I think that Rubio, and this is the Byron Donalds problem too, I think like playing clip after clip of Marco Rubio saying what he said about Donald Trump as he's the running mate is a problem.
Yeah, that would not go well.
I don't think it would.
Would not wear well.
All right, who do you think would be the worst/scariest president if Trump gets the hamburger from heaven and this VP becomes president?
So setting aside the Katie Britt crawl through your TV like the girl from The Ring thing, J.D. Vance, I think, to me.
That's awesome. That was mine,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. You probably read the long Politico piece I did.
I didn't, no. Oh. You're a better reader than I.
Well, lucky you then, John. I get to tell you about it. What it told me was that he is more sincerely committed to the America First white Christian nationalist project that we're seeing out of the Heritage Foundation and these other think tanks than I thought, and maybe it's a different project than Trump. And it made my hair stand on end and worry about him. The question with him has always been like, is he the J.D. Vance from his book that seemed more reasonable?
Hillbilly Elegy,
which I read at the time. I thought was pretty good. And yeah. I know you're not allowed to say that anymore. Twitter circles. But it was interesting, and it seemed like an effort to better understand people's problems and solve them. I think he was wrong about all his solutions. But the J.D. Vance that we've all gotten to know since is scary and isolationist in bad ways and just a bad person and a demagogue.
And I actually don't think he is bullshitting us.
Like, no,
I think
I believe
he has been radicalized.
I agree.
And I think he's pretty smart, certainly smarter than Trump. I kind of think he's like what people thought DeSantis might be,
mm-hmm.
but like the real deal.
Smarter DeSantis.
So I worry about him a lot.
Yeah.
All right, now getting inside Trump's mind, which is always fun. Who do you think he wants, and who do you think the campaign wants? I think the campaign wants Scott, maybe Rubio. They want someone to help with certain demographics. That'd be my guess.
I mean, listen, if you're Donald Trump and you're picking like a roll dog and someone that you got to have around all the time, I think he probably wants JD. They seem like there's kind of a buddy-buddy thing going on. I think Don Jr. is friends with J.D. Vance, which Trump won't totally hold against him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's out there. So I could see them being buddies. And there also seems to be a genuine friendship relationship with Kristi Noem that I don't totally understand.
Also, you know, Trump's presentation person, right?
He's a central casting.
Look at this attractive woman that I have as my running mate. And he feels like that about men, too. You have to look good to be around Trump.
To fly Air Force One, you have to be smoking hot. You have to look like Tom Cruise, but better.
Even though that has not worked out for him with some of the people that he has had around him, but that is what he says that.
He talks about
it.
No, all the generals are out of central casting.
Yes,
sure,
they're all. Yeah, he does it when he's like, they're manly and they're tough,
exactly,
and they're big.
Yeah.
Big muscles, you know. So Trump has also been cozying up to some Wall Street billionaires, if Doug Burgum doesn't come through with the check, both as potential Treasury secretaries and donors to his cash-strapped campaign. He's got a fundraiser in Palm Beach this weekend on Saturday that his campaign claims will raise $33 million, which would break Biden's record of $25 million from last week's event with Obama and Clinton. Trump's is being co-hosted by billionaire hedge fund manager John Paulson, who famously got rich off the subprime mortgage crisis.
Nice.
And is now reportedly a candidate for Treasury Secretary.
Great.
There's also a bunch of rich people going who at one time or another said they were done with Trump. One donor told The Wall Street Journal, quote, "There are a lot of Wall Street people who tried everything else and are in the process of coming back to the party and Trump." Ah, well, they didn't like the attempted coup and insurrection, but... you know what's really bad? A higher marginal tax rate.
That was Melania, right? That quote?
Is that what you...
No, just kidding. Yeah. So let me channel my inner Ben LaBolt for a second, White House communications director. If I were a reporter covering the Trump campaign, I would probably wait to see some receipts before I reported that it was going to raise $33 million at an event.
Yeah.
It's possible. But the Biden fundraiser with Obama, Bill Clinton, Stephen Colbert at Radio City, a venue that seats like 5,000 people, raised $25 million. Mm-hmm. And that was like unheard of. I couldn't believe it when I saw those numbers. So again, like this event with Trump could raise $33 million. The reason is because of a bunch of Supreme Court rulings that did away with donation caps. And now if you're a Democrat, you can be asked to write a check for $929,600 to the Joint Fundraising Committee that goes to the Biden campaign, the DNC, Democratic state parties. That's before you get the super PAC. So basically, God help you if you're a rich Democrat and Jeffrey Katzenberg has your number.
That's going to be bad.
That call is coming. But so who knows? Like maybe they can find 40 billionaires to write like an $800,000 some odd check to the Trump victory fund. But I doubt it.
I know it shouldn't be surprising, but these fucking billionaires coming back to Trump who were like, yeah, no more after January 6th. You know, they all wrote their little missives, and maybe it was on Twitter, or maybe it was on their email list to their rich friends. You know, never again, no more Trump. And now they're only back because they only give a shit about themselves and their money. And that's who they're going to, they're just like Trump, right? Like, and they're going to take care of rich people if they get back to the White House and he gets back to the White House and they play a role in it. And it's all a scam. These people all think that Trump voters are fucking rubes.
Yep.
They have no respect for him. They just don't care. It's just like how Trump feels about the evangelical Christians, feels the same way about his other voters. It's just, he just wants rich friends around. That's all he wants.
We love the rubes. You can imagine saying it at an event. I mean, we dealt with this same stuff in the Obama years. We had a bunch of Wall Street types support Obama because they thought he was inspiring. They were ready to move on from the Bush years. And then they got really sad because during the financial crisis, there was rhetoric coming out of the Democratic Party in the White House that was anti-Wall Street.
That's right, listeners. You might be surprised to learn that the big thing that we dealt with in that first year was people angry at Obama because he was too tough on Wall Street.
Because their feelings were all hurt because, I don't know, they almost ruined the global economy. And we had to remind them that, you know, this administration is the reason there aren't people with pitchforks in your office right now.
But yeah, anyway. And we didn't want to like give him more bonuses that paid for by the fucking taxpayers. Like,
yeah. Anyway. But, you know, look, I think the challenge is always going to be that at the end of the day, these donations are investments for Republicans because they pay off a bunch of Republicans now and they cut their taxes later.
Yeah.
If you're supporting a Democrat, you're probably going to get your taxes increased if it can get through Congress, which, you know, will be difficult, but.
And that's what these people really care about. Honestly, that's what like fucking Elon Musk cares about. That's what David Sachs cares about. That's what all these people, they just, they feel, you know, they feel attacked because all they do is just like sit on Twitter, sit on social media and have their brains poisoned by the internet. And then they're worried that someone's coming for their money.
Yeah. I think the richer you get, the more paranoid you get. Two quick things on fundraising that I just wanted to flag. Did you see that today Trump sent an April Fool's fundraising email with the subject line, "I'm suspending my campaign"?
I did see that. And then at the bottom, he said, "Just April Fool's, just kidding. I will never surrender.
I will never surrender."
Easy, buddy.
But Josh Dossie from Washington Post had a great story about how Republicans are having a hard time with small dollar fundraising because they just abuse their donors and their lists with messages like that.
Yeah.
And I guess they talked, the story talked about how.
I'll just say Democrats in glass houses.
Oh, well, listen, if you guys, texting stop is my kink. It's all I do. I complain about it. All my friends complain about it. Hannah was complaining about
it
the other day.
It's awful.
The story talked about how they've been trying to diversify away from only Trump messaging because that was doing the best, but they were like doing it too often. But they've been struggling. And it said, quote, "One such message, a sweepstakes to meet Pence, raised less than $500, according to people familiar with the 2022 sweepstakes." So again,
wait, whose message was that to meet Pence?
It was a donor email where you could win a sweepstakes to meet Mike Pence and it raised $500.
I'll tell you so a message funny. About Mike Pence that would have raised some more
I know,
money.
I know.
It would have been hang out with Mike Pence, but not hang
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, a little different. Yeah, tweak it.
So it does seem like Trump really needs all this money. Did you see that he lost $1 billion today, Monday, after shares of his fake media company dropped by 20%?
So yeah, DJT, the stock, ended the day down 21%, which I don't know. I guess they filed some paperwork that showed they lost $58 million. So that's not good.
Yeah, that's not good when you in 1 year in 2023 $58 million.
Yeah, and they generated $4.1 million in revenue, which is not great. But I mean, it was surprising to me to see it drop 20% because, again, this is not a financially viable company at the moment. They're not trading on fundamentals. This is not Apple. There's no price to equity. It's a meme stock. And so I don't know. I think we're all just waiting to see if Trump gets permission to dump shares early from his board.
I know. But I wonder, I saw something that if they vote to let him dump his shares early, they could be like, that could be an SEC violation because they don't have the interest of the company in mind there.
Yeah. Right?
I also wonder if part of the drop was due to like in that filing, the company accountants warned that the losses are so severe that they, quote, raise substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue.
Yeah, well, so the point of the SPAC merger is they merged with that DWAC company, and they should now have access to $300 million because of that merger to run and grow the thing. But, you know, it sounds like they're burning through that pretty fast. DJT is also the most heavily shorted stock, I think, in the entire stock market right now. So a lot of investors are betting it will go down. But yeah, the value of the Trump shares went from $6 billion last week to $3.7 billion today. So that's a tough week. That said, it could all go back up. It's not trading on fundamentals. It's momentum and FOMO, like a meme stock, like the crypto.
Is this going to like follow the polls, do we think?
I think so. I mean, I think ultimately this is a bet on him winning.
Yeah.
You know? But until then, like, you know, there's all these shit coins and, you know, cryptocurrencies, like the Pepe coin's got a $3 billion market cap. Like there are people who like to buy this stuff.
It's grift all the way down. All right, so after a two-week break from campaigning, Trump is in Wisconsin and Michigan this week, where his campaign says he'll give remarks on, quote, Biden's border bloodbath. Just owning the bloodbath.
Biden's border bloodbath.
I know. It's
a lot of bees.
A lot of bees. This comes after Trump posted a video last weekend that includes an image of Joe Biden hogtied in the back of a pickup truck and several posts where he attacks the daughter of Judge Juan Merchan, shares her name and picture, and says that her father should be removed from the hush money case because she apparently runs a consulting firm that apparently sometimes works with Democrats. Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, responded by asking the judge for a broader gag order. There's already one in place on Trump that also protects the judge and his family. So certainly not the first time any of this has happened. Obviously worries people like us. Do you think it resonates or breaks through with most voters? The Biden campaign today actually held a press conference, and they had some ahead of this trip by Trump to Wisconsin and Michigan, and they had a couple police officers who served on January 6th sort of talking about Trump's threats of violence, how he incites violence, and sort of the effects that it had.
Yeah, I think that strategy is smart. I think if you treat it as a one-off, it probably won't work, especially the image of Biden hogtied on a truck. I mean, that's sort of like, I don't know, some weirdo's truck. It's kind of truck nuts adjacent. I don't know that people...
The whole thing's weird.
It's just odd, right? The attack on the family of a judge is wild. And I do think it's just worth pausing for a second that Trump, just to explain what's happening, Trump is attacking the adult daughter of a New York Supreme Court judge and saying her political affiliations mean her father can't be fair and impartial. Meanwhile, the classified documents case in Florida is being overseen by Aileen Cannon, who Trump literally appointed to the job. And by the way, if these things get appealed up to the Supreme Court, there'll be three more Trump appointees there just waiting to bail him out. So that we're already in such a dumb place. The fact that we're debating this and calling it sort of rigged and unfair to him, as opposed to him literally being before a judge who he gave the job to, is absurd on its face. But I do think on the violence point, like, one-off, people will probably just not see it or pay attention to it. But making it a broader story that ties back to Jan 6, I do think that's real.
I do, too. And I think it's important for, again, like, there's people who are tuned into politics like us, and then there's people who aren't, which is most voters. And there's also for people who think that Trump bears just some responsibility for January 6th, which is like a good chunk of voters. They think he was bad, but they don't quite think it was all his fault, mm-hmm. right? And not necessarily Trump supporters either, just like sort of undecided, moderate, and in the middle of voters. I think for them, the most effective arguments is like what Trump will do if he gets a second term that could incite violence. Definitely. So releasing a bunch of people from prison who were convicted by a jury of their peers for beating the shit out of police officers on January 6th. I think people would not like that. The fact that he and his advisors have talked about invoking the Insurrection Act so that he deploys the U.S. military against fucking protesters.
Yeah, that's not good.
That seems scary. Like the fact that he said police officers should be able to shoot suspected shoplifters on the spot when they walk out of a store. Like those are the things that I think are more powerful arguments just because A, he said them and promised them or whatever else. And people can say, oh, God, if he becomes president, that kind of world could... We could be living in that kind of world.
Yeah, it's certainly the case that it's weird and wrong to tweet out a photo of your political opponent being hogtied and, I don't know, taken somewhere to do bad things to them. It is part of a broader pattern of him, I think, normalizing political violence and celebrating it. I mean, I've forgotten about the comments about shooting shoplifters, but it also reminded me of when he was speaking before a bunch of police and he talked about how he encouraged them to rough suspects up when they shove them in the car and stuff.
And now he's got a policy to match that for the second term. He wants to indemnify all police officers in the whole country, which is going to be hard to do as a federal law. But like, it's same thing. He wants mandatory stop and frisk in every community in the country, and he's going to cut federal funding to any locality that doesn't have mandatory stop and frisk. Deportation raids, they're going to go into cities and have, like, again, armed soldiers and agents of the state knocking on people's doors, raiding workplaces, and checking for people's papers to see if they're actual citizens. Like, all that stuff has, like, is more likely to cause violence than any kind of image.
Yeah, and listen, I think, obviously, people saw the police brutality spill out into the public space and around George Floyd's murder. And, you know, I think a lot of those things go way too far.
Yeah.
And actually, if you explain to an average voter that you want stop and frisk in every community, they would think that's crazy.
Because, totally,
look, a lot of this is racist.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people who don't live in big cities like New York and LA being like, those people in those cities, read people of color, need different laws to keep the city safe than I do in my community. And Ohio or whatever it is. He does have a big advantage on crime and immigration, but that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, and I think what you said, like the Biden campaign using, you know, this controversy to then do a press conference with police officers, like taking it back to January 6th, I think is very smart, because I think that really resonates with people.
Not, it can't just be like Twitter outrage bait.
Yeah. So Biden campaign is also stepping up its outreach to Republicans, especially Nikki Haley voters, who aren't yet sure if they'll support Trump in November. The campaign is out with a new digital ad that Biden tweeted with the message, "Nikki Haley voters, Donald Trump doesn't want your vote. I want to be clear. There's a place for you in my campaign." And here's the ad.
Bird brain. I call her bird brain.
She's gone haywire. There aren't that many never Trumpers anymore.
How do you bring these Nikki Haley voters back into the tent?
I'm not sure we need too many.
So, seems like a smart move to me. I'm interested to hear what you think. Our pal Jonathan Martin has a piece out in Politico where he argues that Biden himself hasn't done enough outreach to Republican politicians who've said they don't want to support Trump. People like Haley, Chris Christie, Mike Pence, Larry Hogan, etc. Mm-hmm. What do you think's going on there?
I think the ad's smart. I think we need to build the biggest, broadest coalition possible. Again, from never Trump to, I guess, from maybe Trump to DSA left. And
yeah.
I think criticizing outreach to any one of those communities is stupid. And I think we need to learn from the left in other countries to figure out how to build big coalitions. In terms of the Jonathan Martin piece, it was interesting. It surprised me.
Me too.
Larry Hogan is the one exception in there because he's running for Senate in Maryland and he's kind of winning at the moment.
Right. I was wondering if in J. Mart's piece, the point was like, maybe he should have reached out to Larry Hogan before he jumped into the Senate race.
That's possible. But at the end of the day, I mean, these guys have big egos. They need some love and some coaxing to your side. And if you think about it just in terms of psychological terms, I mean, if you're a Chris Christie, your entire life is built around your identity as a Republican elected official, your friends, your donors, your coworkers, right? Like, you need to feel some sort of pull and love from the other side that you'll be welcomed. And we're not necessarily very good at that in the Democratic Party. We love to just shit on people and never let them be forgiven for their past political sins.
Right. And then we have debates about whether it's like morally right or wrong to do that. Put that aside. It's just about politics. Do we want to win the election or not?
I'm not saying yet, right? I'm not saying that you buy your children biographies of these people and treat them like a mentor. Like, let's get their votes. Let's get their endorsements.
You don't have to nominate them for the Profile and Courage Award.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, Chris Christie's an effective messenger. And he's someone who is very close with Trump and can attack him in personal ways and get in his head and reach a certain subset of voters. So I don't know. Mike Pence, maybe not the best use of time. I'm not sure I'd be having Joe Biden call Mike Pence, I don't know.
Who cares? Give him a call. What does it hurt?
It's probably the first time his phone would ring in like a year and a half.
So I was really wondering like what's going on there. And there's only two explanations I can think of. One, it was just too early and like they're going to get to it and they're just starting to start the campaign now. So maybe that was it, even though I think right now is not too early at this stage in April. But then the second one is like, are they worried about progressive blowback if it leaks that he was calling all these people? But again, the campaign put out the ad reaching out for Haley voters, so they can't be too worried about that. And as J. Mart says in the piece, like, Biden, of all people, he's still telling fucking stories about, you know, Strom Thurmond. Like,
right.
he loves reaching out to Republicans. So I'm confused.
Yeah, my read on the current Gaza policy is not a ton of concern about lefty blowback from people like me. Listen, I think if you're mad that Joe Biden called Chris Christie, you probably should worry about other things, you know? And I
also, I think if you're mad about that, like, you're...
It's politics.
Find me a person who was going to vote for Joe Biden and then said, no, he called Mitt Romney and Chris Christie. I'm out.
Yeah.
So find me that person.
I think it would be worth calling Mitt Romney. It'd be worth calling Chris Christie. It'd be worth, I guess lobbing a call to Mike. Send him an email. Send Pence an email.
And again, no one's saying you have to, like, just give them a policy win here.
Right. You're not giving them anything. This is not a negotiation. It's a political touch to see if they'll come to your side.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Esper, Trump's defense secretary, mm-hmm. who, said a couple weeks ago that Trump was like, hey, can't we have the military shoot the protesters, the George Floyd protesters? So that's him. Over the weekend, he said, there's no way I'll vote for Trump, but every day Trump does something crazy, the door to voting for Biden opens a little more. And it's like, that's the exact kind of person
exactly
that we need.
And that person is in a lonely place, yeah. Right? Because they're bucking their party. He was run out of town by Trump. Trump criticized him personally. They called him Yesper. They made fun of him. They mocked him when he was defense secretary because he never should have had the job. He's a joke.
Right.
Yeah. He's a lobbyist.
Yeah.
Now he needs a little love from the top and maybe he'll do an ad for you.
That's all we're looking for here. We're just looking for some ads. All right. Before we go, we save the best for last, Tommy. New RNC co-chair / aspiring pop star Lara Trump released a new single on Friday called Anything Is Possible, of which her career trajectory is certainly living proof. Here's a sample of the sure-to-be chart-topping banger.
Talking to that little girl, riding on the Pegasus, tell her everything's gonna be all right.
What is the Pegasus?
Saul made that clip too long.
Yeah, it's really long. Immortal winged horse. Okay.
I can't ever look. I didn't think I'd have like third hand embarrassment for someone like Larry Trump, but I genuinely do.
Her Don't Back Down cover. First of all, you can't cover like an iconic Tom Petty song when you have no talent. Like, that's where you should, again, that should be the last thing you cover. I sent that other Larry Trump song we just heard to my friend Ryan, who you know well, yeah. Lives in LA here. He went to Berkeley, played at a bunch of really big bands. He runs studio sessions for huge artists. He mixes.
He's a tremendous musician.
He's like one of the, he's a musical genius. He does scores, TV, and film now. He was so offended by the production quality.
Oh, interesting.
He was like the auto-tune. He's like, sounds like a nasal robot.
She does sound like a nasal, yeah.
The engineering upset him. And I think he was just so mad because he knows, like, if you're rich, pay someone to make you sound good.
That was,
she didn't even do that.
Fucking horrific. So, not to be outdone, the DNC responded with their own self-described summer party anthem about Lara Trump and the RNC called Party's Fallen Down. Let's listen.
Lara Trump, what's going on? You're running the RNC, but it's a sad song. Oh, Lara, Lara, what have you done? The party's falling down, it's no longer fun. Oh, Lara, Lara, can't you see? The leadership sinking from your
pee. Okay. How many times have you listened to each song since Friday? Have you had that on repeat?
Laura, I can't do it. I can't
more or less than
it,
Cowboy
it
Carter.
Hurts me. Did the DNC one, was it just AI generated? I think it was.
I have a lot of questions about the DNC one, which is like, was it AI generated? How long did it take to put that together? I hope the answer is 10 minutes.
I think it was probably not a lot of time.
Yeah.
And it also
in which
was,
case, fine.
Look, everyone knows this. Music is formulaic, and that song will probably be playing at like Ultra in Miami next year or something. But I kind of like them trolling her. The more time Lara Trump spends in the studio, the less time she's fundraising or whatever. I don't know what she'll be doing. I mean, all the money, what's amazing about this, this really is like Banana Republic shit. Trump installs his daughter-in-law at the RNC. She greenlights this fundraising waterfall where all the checks that come in to the Trump fundraising committee first go to his PAC that does legal defense
she
funds.
She purges the entire committee.
Purging the staff.
She's asking people if they're election deniers before they can get hired.
Yeah, you have to say the sky is red before you can get a job
you
there.
You probably have to say her song is fucking awesome, too.
Yeah, you do. Now, all that said, Trump could still win. It's 50-50, so I don't know what that says about us.
I just had an idea.
What?
I think that you and our pal Brian Tyler Cohen should do a Liberal Tears where you draft worst political songs.
Oh, that's good.
Like the Hillary in the House song.
That's a great song. Why would you ever say that?
Well, I'm saying that maybe I guess you guys always do the worst.
Because it's a beautiful song, Hillary in the House.
What about the Obama girl, remember, from...
That was tough.
There's Mitt Romney singing Who Let the Dogs Out? I mean, there's a... Right?
Mitt Romney.
I think this is a whole episode.
Mitt Romney just stumbling into a photo with like four or five younger black males. And the only thing he could think to say was, who let the dogs out? It was so...
And then he said, who?
Horribly embarrassing.
Anyway, there's a rich history of these.
Will I Am.
Oh, yeah. Will I Am turned our speech into a song.
Not ours, pal. Yours.
a bunch of celebs were in that. What was it? 2008. It was weird times.
Yeah,
better times. Better times, but weird times.
The cringe was embraced and it was mainstream, and it didn't feel like cringe in the moment. It felt a little more hopeful.
This felt pretty cringe. Although I had our staff was cringing about the Party's Fallen Down. I had not listened to that, mm-hmm. but I had also not listened to the Larry Trump thing. The Party's Fallen Down is like, haha, cringe, whatever. The Larry Trump thing is like, I don't think I can listen to it again.
Her range is like half an octave.
I did it for this pod, and I did it once before this pod, and I don't think I can ever do it again.
She's singing from up within her nose, it sounds like. Just so nasal.
Anyway, I wish her all the best. All right, few quick housekeeping notes before we go. If you haven't heard yet, we're hitting the road. Pod Save America's hitting the road this summer for the Democracy or Else tour. If you're in Brooklyn, Boston, Madison, Phoenix, Philly, or Ann Arbor, or coming to your city, VIP tickets include a signed copy of our book, Democracy or Else, How to Save America in 10 Easy Steps, and more exclusive merch. And you know what? We finished signing all the copies.
Oh, it took like hours and hours.
So many copies. Check out Pod Save America, plus Love It or Leave It, tour dates at crooked.com/events. Also, we're mentioning this outreach to Haley voters. Well, if you want some actual facts behind it on the polling, Dan Pfeiffer's got you covered. In the latest episode of Polar Coaster, he talks to guest Alyssa Cass about the Haley voters that could absolutely swing the election. I just listened to the episode this morning. It's fantastic. Take a look. But to get access to this series and other subscriber exclusives, you got to head to crooked.com/friends.
A woman in the house, the White House.
Hillary in the White House. Hillary in the House.
Hey, hey.
Hillary in the White House.
We don't need no bling. All we gotta do is cheer.
414,000 views on this. 400,000 of them are me.
Yeah, us.
And that's Hillary Clinton, the one.
I watched this so many times. You have to watch the video. So go to YouTube and just what did you search for?
Hillary in the House. If you know the guy in the bottom left corner with the beanie on doing the facial reactions, please get him in touch with me somehow. We should probably go to commercial now.
Pokemon, go to the polls. If you want to get ad-free episodes, exclusive content, and more, consider joining our Friends of the Pod subscription community at crooked.com/friends. And if you're already doom scrolling, don't forget to follow us at Pod Save America on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube for access to full episodes, bonus content, and more. Plus, if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Olivia Martinez and David Toledo. Our associate producers are Saul Rubin and Farah Safari. Kira Joaquim is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive producer. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Writing support by Hallie Kiefer. Madeline Herringer is our head of news and programming. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Andy Taft is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Mia Kelman, David Tolles, Kirill Pelaviv, and Molly Lobel.